Well, wouldn't you want to save lives in Iceland? H-squared would. That's Herbert Huppert, Fellow of King's College, Cambridge, for 50 years. But he's from Bondi in Sydney. He does the maths of busy liquids, and lava can be very busy and dangerous, running in a hot red tide from a volcano towards you in lots of places. So you need to know lots of possibilities to save lives.
It's a great problem, particularly I've become involved with lava flows in Iceland. They don't kill many people in comparison to volcanoes who can kill up to a million, but they cause enormous damage to buildings, and the Mount St. Helens eruption in 1980 cost $1 billion in the damage it did to buildings. So I thought it would be worthwhile having a meeting discussing lava, how to defend against them and what you might do. And I'd worked a little bit on that beforehand, so I thought it would be nice to have a group of international people get together for a week and talk about the problems and how to resolve them.
And of course, lava comes from volcanoes as well, but is it being emitted from regular holes in the ground rather than in an explosive way, but in a flowing, continual way?
No, it doesn't really come from holes in the ground. It always comes from volcanoes because it's the molten rock that is kept beneath the surface, and then pressure increases and sends the magma, as it is within the earth, out onto the surface of the earth when it becomes lava. It's a little bit like a fetus comes out and is a child. So that's why they have the different names. And lava can do lots of damage, and so we wanted to see how to avert that.
When it is a flow like that, is it indefinite? Does it keep going for a long, long, long time?
In geology, a million years is a relatively short time. It doesn't go that long. It solidifies. The question is, how quickly will it solidify, and where will it go as it's flowing before it solidifies? Will it go over new topography and cause difficulties in areas that it hasn't caused before? Or will it stop and freeze? And they're the sort of questions we looked at and tried to understand.
And what's the situation? Describe it in Iceland.
They've been really a great problem, quite a few volcanic eruptions and lava flows which have inundated some of their towns, but they have a very good group of people who are trying their best to make the problem as small as possible, and in particular building barriers that stop or slow down the lava flow or divert lava flow. And recent eruption, they built barriers within a few days. I was amazed at how quickly, because they were all prepared, they managed to build barriers that stop the flow.
What are the barriers made of?
Well, that's interesting. In Iceland, quite a few of the barriers were just made of large piles of little pieces of rock that they had ready, and they in particular protected a very important communication system without which Iceland might have ended up unknown to the rest of the world.
So this meeting was held. What was the result?
The result was, first of all, not only did we have quite a few lectures, two a day, we also had group meetings, five different groups who talked about different aspects of looking at lava flows and deciding how they might be defended against. And then I have decided that a very important journal that, in fact, mainly edited my wonderful engineer in Melbourne is going to have a special issue where every paper in that journal is going to report on aspects of lava flows that are needed.
Apart from Iceland, which is a fascinating country but fairly small, where else is this a problem?
Oh, this is a problem in Hawaii, and anywhere that there is a volcano, there'll be a problem associated with it. So it's in the west coast of the United States, in Japan, and a number of places.
So the Ring of Fire, in other words.
Yeah, correct.
And so people have been looking, in the first instance, at the explosion of the volcano, and then not sufficiently the end result, which lasts a long time.
Well, the point is that a lot of people, like me, have looked at theoretical questions and can say quite well what will happen if lava that comes out has a definite temperature and viscosity and how it might flow over a smooth surface. That's the simplest mathematical problem. I have done some work looking at lava flows in Iceland over topographic surfaces, and we got really quite good results between our theoretical calculations and what actually happened, and that's important.
So you can tell people how long to pay attention carefully.
Yeah, how long it might take. I mean, we have a first state response, but there's much more that needs to be known. We, or I at least, have always modelled rather simply lava flows as a viscous fluid, but I haven't taken into account that there's a crystal content. I and others haven't taken into account that the topography isn't flat. That's the easiest thing to do, and here in Cambridge everything is flat.
Now let me ask you about these gardens. What are they, the gardens you were telling me about before?
Oh, chemical gardens is something totally different. Glauber, a fascinating scientist some 30 years before Newton, invented chemical gardens where you put a very compressed cobalt chloride, for example, into an aqueous solution of sodium sulfate, but there are lots of different things, and gradually sodium sulfate flows into the cobalt chloride, expands it a little bit, and then depending upon concentrations, it'll suddenly explode and rise with a coloured crystal content that looks exactly like flowers and plants, and so that's how they got the name of chemical gardens. They were made even more famous in that in 1977, Alvin, the submersible that is owned by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, went down and discovered the first deep sea smokers, basically underwater volcanoes, something like 1.5 kilometres. And there were lots of these chemical gardens around. And the thing that's fascinating about that is there's no free oxygen, there's no sunshine there, so how did these chemical gardens get to be? And some people have seriously argued that this must be the origin of life. And roughly half the people who are knowledgeable about this area think that this is true and this is how we all originated.
How deep does Alvin go? Because it's quite a long way, isn't it?
It sure is. And the fascinating thing about Alvin, it's a very small submersible with a captain and two scientists. And I once asked one of the scientists, what happens if you have a need for something else? And he said, bad luck. You must do it before you get into it. And that having been said, I've met and talked with three scientists, each of whom told me they were on the first voyage that discovered chemical gardens. And I stupidly didn't realise that when the third one said to me that he had been on the voyage, I should have said to him, and who was your companion? And then I would have been able to determine which of the three was lying to me and showing off.
Would you ever dare go down in Alvin? I wouldn't.
Oh, no, I would love to go down in Alvin. And there's never been any problem, and more risky to drive a car, especially from Sydney to Melbourne. And Alvin has never had a problem at all. Just like Qantas, the Australian airline, has never, ever been responsible for a death.
Such a range of adventures you can enjoy as a graduate in geology. Saving lives, deep sea diving, visiting volcanoes in Hawaii, add maths, and you'll keep Qantas flying, perhaps. Herbert Huppert has done the lot.